Welcome to the GAC Files, a podcast about the people, issues, and ideas driving Global Affairs Canada.
Bienvenue dans les dossiers d'AMC, un balado sur les personnes, les défis et les idées qui animent Affaires mondiales Canada.
And now, introducing your host, Global Affairs Canada's David Morrison.
Et maintenant, présentant votre hôte, David Morrison, d'Affaires mondiales Canada.
Alina Ismael, Andrea Santos, Lucy Vero, Poya Safari, and Roxanne Amel are GAC employees at the early stages of their careers. They were amongst an elite group of about 80 early career public servants, selected from nearly 1,000 applicants for a nine-month project called Canada Beyond 150, Policy for a Diverse and Inclusive Future. This small group of GACers wrestled with some of the leading challenges facing Canada today. Lucy couldn't make it because she's currently on posting in Haiti, but Alina, Andrea, Poya, and Roxanne came by my office recently to talk about their Canada Beyond 150 experience. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Poya, Andrea, Roxanne, Alina, we're going to try something a little different today on the GAC Files. You are four early career professionals here in the department. You've been involved in a project, cross-government, called Canada Beyond 150. We are counting on you to solve some of the great problems Canada is facing, and I think was the genesis of the Canada Beyond 150 experiment. But before we get to that, I want you to tell our listeners who you are. So let's start with Poya.
Sure. So I currently work in a division that does corporate planning, performance, and risk. But I work actually exclusively on experimentation. I came to GAC on a secondment from TBS in the month of May, so I'm fairly recent arrival here. Before that, I was at TBS for 4 years, and that's where I started in the public service. I kind of came into the public service a little later than most. And before that, I had a few other careers that aren't...
You can't get away with that. Give us a sense of who you are.
So I started out with my education in the area of public policy, a long time ago, and then kind of got disenchanted after my BA and went off and did very different things. So I did a carpentry course. I worked as a carpenter. I taught carpentry. And then I was also involved in a small organic farm. So I did that for about 5-6 years and then went back and did a master's. And after the master's, ended up...
Then we got you.
In the government.
Where'd you grow up?
A little bit all over. I was born in Iran. We moved to Canada when I was 5. And so we lived in Saskatchewan for a little while. And we also lived in Ottawa. But I spent... before coming back to Ottawa, I spent about 12 years in Montreal.
Okay. Andrea.
So my name is Andrea, and in my bio I wrote that I had a hyphenated identity because I think that's really what defines me. I'm the proud daughter of Portuguese immigrants, so I think that's always defined sort of me and the way I see the world. Growing up, seeing my parents struggle was very impactful on me, but I also saw the testament and how powerful a community can be, including Portuguese Canadian communities in Toronto. And I think that's kind of where I want to give my parents return on investment for kind of the sacrifices they made, but also return on investment. I want to give back to Canada too, and I can't think of a better way to give back than to serve and give back to the country that really kind of afforded me and my family with all these wonderful opportunities.
Amazing. And at what stage of their lives were your parents when they came to Toronto?
They were 30, okay. So they immigrated quite late in the game. And
right.
My first language was actually Portuguese.
Right.
So, yeah.
Great. Roxane.
Oui, Roxane Hamel, je suis déléguée commerciale à la division de la Chine élargie. Avant d'arriver à GAC, j'ai travaillé à Emploi et Développement social, puis aussi à Transport Canada comme analyste de politique. Je suis originaire de la ville de Québec. Ça fait à peu près 5 ans, en fait, ouais. 5 ans exactement que j'ai déménagé à Ottawa. Ouais.
Mais ta famille?
Ma famille, oui. Je sais pas, 4e, 5e, 6e, 1e génération des deux côtés.
De la ville de Québec.
D'aussi loin que je sache de France.
Ouais. Et tu as des membres de ta famille qui ont travaillé dans le service public fédéral avant toi?
Non, en fait, je suis la seule qui habite en Ontario maintenant dans ma famille. Je suis la seule qui s'est un peu éloignée de la ville de Québec. Mes frères, ma famille travaillent. Personne n'a jamais compris pourquoi je voulais quitter Québec, pourquoi je m'intéressais aux relations internationales.
C'est un peu ma question.
Ouais. Okay. Non, ça vient de... Je suis un peu le vilain canard ou l'oiseau rare comme de la famille.
Ouais. OK. Alina.
Yes, my name is Alina Ismail. I feel like I just learned so much about these people that I've been working with for the past year and a bit. So just to give you a little bit of background, I grew up in the GTA. My family is of Indian origin, and I moved to Ottawa for university about 8 years ago. I started my career at Global Affairs at the Emergency Watch and Response Center, so in the kind of consular emergency management world, and now I am a strategic communications advisor for Europe on the foreign policy side. I think you wanted us to talk a little bit about the, you know, Canada Beyond 150 program and how we got involved. So I'll take the opportunity to thank my manager at the time for really, giving opportunities to me and other young people or new employees, as we might say, in the department to get different experiences from what you're used to. You know, coming from consular, I had never worked in the policy world before. And I think I really learned the value of getting different perspectives from this experience. Mm.
So let's step back. My understanding is that Canada Beyond 150, Policy for a Diverse and Inclusive Future, was an initiative to get small teams of young or newish public servants together to work on complex policy challenges. And you all had to apply. Take us through how it started. You obviously, were you nominated, or how, tell us a little bit about the process.
Donc, le programme a été mis en place par le Bureau du Conseil privé et Horizon des politiques Canada. C'est l'organisation au gouvernement qui fait de l'étude de prospective, de foresight. Au total, on était 80 participants au programme. Il y avait, je crois, près de 800, 1000 candidats au début. Donc, on a appliqué. Il fallait être... Un des critères importants était d'être un fonctionnaire en début de carrière. Ce qui est intéressant avec le processus de candidature, on s'est rendu compte par après, c'est que bien qu'ils n'ont mis aucun quota en termes de diversité, on a bien remarqué que les 80 participants... La diversité était incroyable en termes au niveau de francophonie, au niveau des origines de chacun, au niveau des ministères. Il y avait des participants de partout dans la fonction publique, incluant dans les régions. Comme vous avez mentionné, on nous a demandé d'étudier des problèmes complexes, des problèmes épineux. Mes collègues Alina, Andrea ont étudié le problème du gouvernement féministe. Poya, toi, qu'est-ce que tu faisais?
C'était réconciliation.
La réconciliation. Moi, j'ai travaillé sur l'avenir du travail. On a aussi une cinquième collègue que j'ai mentionnée, Lucie Véro, qui est présentement à Haïti. En affectation, qui travaillait aussi sur le gouvernement féministe. Donc, on a été divisé en petits groupes.
De quelle taille?
Ça dépendait vraiment, en fait, parce qu'on nous a laissé libre cours pour choisir le dossier sur lequel on voulait travailler. Mon équipe était de 8 personnes. Je crois qu'il y avait des équipes un peu plus grosses.
Oui, nous, c'était 17, je crois, à la fin.
15, peut-être, pour nous.
And so you applied, were by some mechanism selected, you all get into the same room one day? I mean, there's a kind of a kickoff event. You're divided into five groups on these five complex themes. And I'll just, reconciliation, sustainable development goals, open and transparent government, socioeconomic inclusion, and feminist government. And you have a year or 9 months to do what?
So I guess firstly, like, so we all self-selected. We decided which of these themes we wanted to pursue. So then that's part of the reason why the size of the groups are vary a bit. And it's hard to maybe to summarize everything. But I think really from my perspective of our team anyway, the goal of the project was to kind of reflect on this big complex issue using some tools that we might have not otherwise been introduced to, like foresight, like design thinking,
co-creation.
And with those tools in hand, so firstly to learn about those tools, and then with those tools in hand to kind of learn about each of the topics, each of the areas that we were kind of investigating, looking into, and then to develop ideas for how, you know, we as a public service, as a government can kind of tackle those issues. So I think it varied. I think kind of the problem definition, the ways we went about kind of coming up with solutions, if you will, varied by team.
But I think that was the most interesting piece about this project, is that we came in with these very broad themes and didn't have the problem defined for us. So our response, like our role, was to define that problem. And the way we did that was by talking to stakeholders and asking stakeholders to define the problem, which is very different from how we do kind of work here at GAC. And I think that was kind of one of the best learning experiences, because I don't know, in my experience, when we typically consult on something, we've already, as global affairs, have already defined what we think is the problem is.
Sure, because we're really smart.
Yeah, and I think, I think in our group, we had a vision for
And your group was?
Sorry, the feminist government team.
Right.
We had a vision of what we thought was the most critical issue to work on it, like within the feminist government team, and we ended up with an entirely different kind of intervention in the end, which... Initially, we were, concerned with issues relating to SGBV and pay equity, and we ended up with an intervention on immigration and how to get the skills of immigrant women recognized here in Canada, and just, how can we,
Mm-hmm. It's a very rewarding experience in the sense that you might not get a chance to experiment, know, or be wrong about something at first.
Yeah.
So I think all of us are pretty grateful to have had that opportunity to try and fail. And
you were doing this full time or?
No, one day a week.
One day a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And that was the other great part, is that there really was space to fail.
Mm.
But it was intelligent failure, right? We learned from that. And I think that was also a tremendous experience to learn that your failures aren't actually failures. They're opportunities to course correct.
Give us an example of what it meant to fail in this context. How did you know you had failed?
So, do you want to talk about Winnipeg or?
Hang on, what happened in Winnipeg?
Do you many examples?
I feel like
a lot happened in Winnipeg. But
Poya
has a great example of failure.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Okay, so so Winnipeg, firstly, was through the 9 months, we had the opportunity to all travel to Winnipeg, spent a few days there, kind of at a conference essentially, where we had the opportunity as teams to kind of continue our work and kind of do a deep dive. So
and get out of the Ottawa bubble.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And to leave Ottawa. So one of the things we did in preparation for Winnipeg was develop kind of these insights, as we called them, based on our foresight work and our kind of, essentially we were looking into the future at the beginning. We were scanning, we were looking for signs of what, related to each of our areas, what were some of the challenges and what were some of the opportunities, what were the things to come in the horizon. And so my team working on reconciliation, we came up with these ideas. I think from the beginning, we had a sense that we didn't have a great grasp, but nonetheless, we came up with certain ideas about what things could look like in 10 or 15 years. And we developed these insights. And when we arrived, we met with stakeholders in Winnipeg. And I guess one little caveat too is that we really, our intention was not to really view them as stakeholders, was from the beginning to take an approach where we saw them as partners, right, as people that we were to develop something with. So when we arrived, we came with ideas, but we were open to, you know, to the idea that they were going to have a different views.
Trash your ideas.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened. And one of the most poignant things they told us was, look, like, you know, you're looking 10, 15 years down the road. We haven't even solved, you know, 150 years ago. So your kind of intentions are a little bit misplaced in this situation. We have to kind of first look at the past and the present before we can even work our way toward the future. So it just goes to show you how foresight, like, it's not every context and not every situation is necessarily ripe for that kind of approach.
Right. So you all of you sort of experienced some kind of going off the rails and bringing it back on. I'm getting, there's a podcast so they can't see, but I'm getting lots of nodding heads.
Absolutely.
You know, it's often said we learn more from our failures than our successes. So that's probably good in a personal sense. These tools that you worked with, foresight, design thinking, co-creation, are they new? Are they, I mean, we won't have time to unpack those three concepts, but were they helpful?
Mm-hmm. C'est un peu la dernière mode ou peut-être l'avant-dernière mode du développement de politique. Je peux parler peut-être un peu de la co-création. Pour nous, la co-création, on a appris un peu à la dure qu'est-ce que ça voulait dire. Je travaillais, comme j'ai dit plus tôt, sur l'avenir du travail. Ça nous a pris beaucoup de temps à essayer de définir c'était quoi exactement le problème avec l'avenir du travail. Je pense que tout le monde ici dans la salle aurait une définition différente des défis à venir dans le monde du travail. Puis c'est un peu ce qui s'est passé pour nous aussi. Ça nous a pris des semaines avant d'arriver à un problème qu'on voulait résoudre. Chacun avait des vues différentes. Ensuite, quand on a présenté, c'était le problème qu'on a identifié, c'était ce qu'on appelle le gig economy, la montée du travail à contrat, le moins d'emplois stables. Ensuite, on a voyagé à Winnipeg. On a rencontré nos intervenants qui étaient, dans ce cas-ci, des agences d'emploi, des gens qui travaillent dans le monde du travail à Winnipeg. Puis on leur a exposé notre problème en essayant de travailler avec eux pour trouver des solutions. Ce qu'ils nous ont dit, c'est que pour eux, le concept de gig economy, ça ne voulait rien dire. Parce que de toute façon, Winnipeg étant, et c'était surtout des travailleurs, c'est une ville de travailleurs, il n'y a pas beaucoup d'emplois de bureaux. Tout le monde travaille déjà à contrat. Donc là, on s'est rendu compte que, bon, OK, on ne peut pas définir notre problème tout seul d'Ottawa. Nous, jeunes fonctionnaires avec une stabilité d'emploi incroyable, ce n'est pas nous qui vont définir c'est quoi le problème avec l'avenir du travail. Donc, on a décidé, plutôt que de définir le problème puis d'aller ensuite parler à nos intervenants, on allait tout simplement couper l'étape de définition de problème, aller voir nos intervenants puis leur demander, eux, qu'est-ce qui va se passer dans l'avenir du travail? Qu'est-ce qui ne marchera pas? Puis qu'est-ce qu'on doit résoudre? Donc, je reviens au concept de co-création. Ce n'est pas l'engagement ou les consultations traditionnelles où on prépare un document ou un dossier ou une solution politique, puis on présente ça à nos intervenants. C'est vraiment de développer la politique dans l'ensemble de A à Z avec nos intervenants. Puis pour nous, ça a été vraiment... une leçon et un succès.
So that's sort of the second time I think I've heard you guys say that one of your learnings is you got to get the other people involved really early. Mm-hmm. Right? And speaking from where I currently sit, I think that holds true as well for here at Global Affairs. Like, consultation does not mean you do your own thing, and then you pass the piece of paper around for an afternoon and get inputs. It actually means you start at the beginning and work you know, work on it together. Problem definition becomes super important, but our system in global affairs, but it's replicated across the government, doesn't lend itself to that, right? Because everybody has vertical accountabilities rather than incentives to work horizontally. But two of you have said that one of your learnings is that, you know, if you want to, you know, it's the old proverb that I think I've used on the podcast before, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And you need to start by going together, it seems. On the issue of your work groups and the diversity within those work groups, how did that play out in terms of what you learned from each other?
As someone who started her career at Global Affairs Canada, I've never worked in other government departments. It was an extremely eye-opening experience to be able to work with people from different departments. Mm-hmm. I learned so much about what, you know, people are doing, you know, in British Columbia or, you know, even in other departments in Canada. So that experience was, I think everyone's experience was quite different, and to be able to look at one problem through so many perspectives is pretty unique.
I've also gone through that experience mm-hmm. quite mm-hmm. recently, although at a much later stage of my career. I think we at Global Affairs can lose sight of the fact that for many, many departments, they deliver services directly to Canadians, mm-hmm. right? They are actually dealing directly with clients, and they are the face of the federal government. Other than the consular area mm-hmm. where you started, there's not and some of the trade stuff where you're dealing directly with companies. We are several steps removed from the Canadians that we're ultimately serving, and that's what the rest of the government does is a thing that I think everybody and the standards to which it is held is a thing I think that everybody at Global Affairs needs to be mindful of.
And just we have so much, I think at Global Affairs we tend to look outward for the answers, but we have so many of these answers in our own backyard. Mm. Like I remember working on youth issues on the development side of things, and then meeting a colleague that worked at the labor program and thinking, had I known there was somebody working on these exact issues and has an incredible amount of know-how, I would have, you know, also consulted them instead of looking, you know, to external stakeholders all the time. So I think sometimes we just don't appreciate the richness of experience that we have in our own backyard. Mm-hmm. And I think I've developed that reflex to consult my colleagues at other departments much more so than I did before I participated in this project. And I also think that made me think about another really powerful lesson was in terms of like your diversity of stakeholders. For example, we were working on the feminist government, on issues relating to feminist government, but we brought together a diversity of stakeholders who weren't necessarily experts in feminism, but like in feminist government, but really, really made us think and like unraveled so many of our blind spots. Like we're like, think about this or think about that. Like, you know, the architect would be like, well, you know, buildings need to have lactating rooms and just things that we wouldn't naturally think of when we spoke to just, you know, our experts on feminist governments. And I think that's, you know, if you're working on a project on refugees, like call in your environment expert because they'll tell you about environmental refugees. Call in your architect because they'll tell you about how to build a good, you know, camp or system or whatever. Like just that diversity of stakeholders and diversity of thought really makes a difference in terms of mm-hmm. Program and policy design.
The Minister of Foreign Affairs, Chrystia Freeland, was on some kind of consultation recently and was made aware that in one of the things that would be useful in terms of a feminist approach to foreign policy, but also the department, is availability of feminine hygiene products in mm-hmm. all of our in all of our washrooms worldwide.
Or at least in the vending machines.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So believe me, she has become seized of this issue, and her deputy minister and her associate deputy minister have taken this on board. And if she's listening, just want her to know that we do we are seized of the issue. But it is a, I mean, I'm partly joking, but it is an extraordinarily powerful thing when you do consult and you think you're going to talk about grand policy, and you end up with something that actually matters deeply to people's lives, and where you find out you do hold the keys to fix that particular problem, even if it's not the grand strategic problem. You've all shared a couple of things that you've learned. How do you feel about the future? Are you, I mean, you're all, for listeners, I tried to guess at their ages before they sat down, and I did very badly. So we settled on this notion of early career. How are you feeling at the earlier stages of your careers about the kinds of challenges that Canada is facing and the role that the federal government can play in helping to solve them? Big question. Yeah. But
I mean, I would just say... For me, it really depends on the issues we're talking about. Obviously, all these issues ahead that we had for this project, for this program, were definitely incredibly complex and difficult. For reconciliation, I think in a way it was a little bit of the oddball, in the sense that it was a problem that we as a team didn't feel we were equipped necessarily to deal with, being predominantly non-Indigenous. And I'll tie it back to your question that I think, so for me, when it comes to reconciliation in particular, I think one of our biggest challenges is giving Indigenous peoples the voice to be able to actually respond to these challenges in a meaningful way alongside the federal government, through the federal government. And I think that is one that we still have a long way to go on. And my experience kind of, in a way, highlighted that, just because again, we were given this complex problem, but in a way, maybe we weren't the right people.
Right.
And I think that wasn't a lesson, and maybe one that going forward could seed some
good lesson to learn. Yeah. Others, optimistic, pessimistic.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings. I think we're still in the process of figuring out what it is that we want for Canada in the future. And though there is a lot of emphasis on the future of our workforce, on the next generation, we have a prime minister that's so keen on advancing youth issues and feminist issues. While we figure out what we want, are we putting as much energy in defining what are the key issues will be for Canada in the future, and what the, you know, climate change is a big one, but there's major issues that are facing not only Canada but other nations, and frankly, I'm a little worried, and I think partly because I'm a mom as well. I don't know what the world's going to look like for my little son, but yeah. I hope that more people can you know, have a forward-looking approach, right, at policy development.
So let me switch up the question just a little bit. When Ian Shugart became deputy minister, one of his first days, actually, or first weeks, he had to give a speech to all of our heads of mission who were gathered here in Ottawa. And he used a phrase which I've thought about a lot since, about policy. And he said something like, policy is the answer to the question, what are we going to do about this problem? And when I share your, there's some really tricky problems out there, climate change being a great example, which are actually existential, right?
Yeah.
I look at AI in a, you know, there's a big thing coming. Great potential on the upside, great potential or great caution on the downside. And all things cyber would be the same. You know, not many years ago, cyber was going to be the answer to everything, and now it's a thing that we're actually trying to protect ourselves against. So the modified version of the question that I'd like to ask is whether you are given to optimism because of your experience with experimentation and this kind of policy design. So even if you can't, even if some of the questions are really, really big and hard, do you have reason to believe that the approach that you guys took shows promise in terms of helping to solve some of these problems?
If I can answer that, mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I would point necessarily to the procedures that we use, but to the people that we met mm-hmm. and worked with.
Right.
You know, we have different methods and we have different, you know, ideas of how to approach different problems. Then those will always change depending on the nature of the problem. But after working with about 80 of these amazing early career public servants, I'm inspired, you know, like I learned so much. And I think that, you know, the resolve of these people to tackle these problems, you know, the passion that I saw is a really good sign of how we can tackle those issues in future.
Others?
I really just have so much faith in kind of the future of the public service. I mean, these are super savvy, super engaged individuals who are genuinely passionate about these big issues mm-hmm. and invested in them. So I think that alone, a genuine willingness to make Canada beyond 150 like a better place for all of us is what keeps me hopeful. I'm feeling really invigorated by all my colleagues in the program, for sure.
I think, Poya?
But no, I mean, I would definitely echo the same sentiment. I think for me, when I first saw the application for the program and I saw these themes, I was a little bit in awe. I didn't expect to really see the opportunity to work on these things a lot of which I really cared about. So that in itself was really encouraging to me. I was a little bit, you know, it warmed my heart to know that, you know, we had the opportunity, mm-hmm. we were given the chance to kind of work on things that we cared about. And I think that goes to what everyone else is saying, like it brought people to the table that really cared.
Right.
And I think that was, it was a surprise to me in a way, and a warming, mm-hmm. a good one.
You know, I'm also, we'll run out of time, but I'm, you know, one of the things that I'm curious about is the day a week model. You know, the Google pioneered the 10% model, where if you have a cool idea, you got to spend 10% of your time on it. Mm-hmm. That created Google Maps. That created Google Earth. You know, because it's actually the people that are like, in a decentralized way working on things mm-hmm. that can sort of see things that corporate doesn't. So I want to give the last word to Roxanne. Just overall reflection on this method of experimentation and Canada Beyond 150.
Mm-hmm. Je crois qu'une journée par semaine, c'est un modèle qui est intéressant. Je crois que ça a bien fonctionné pour certains d'entre nous, mm. moins bien pour d'autres, dépendamment de notre charge de travail. Mais dans tous les cas, je pense que ça nous a tous permis d'explorer des sujets, d'explorer des processus qu'on n'aurait pas autrement eu la chance d'apprendre ou sur lesquels on n'aurait pas pu autrement travailler. Donc, je crois, dans l'ensemble, c'était une expérience qui était extrêmement enrichissante pour tout le monde au programme. Puis on en est resté vraiment avec un réseau de contacts très fort. On a appris à travailler avec des outils fantastiques pour améliorer notre travail ici à GAC. Puis on espère que ça va nous permettre, en fait, de contribuer à GAC d'une manière significative.
And final question. Do you guys have any fun, or what goes on in Winnipeg stays in Winnipeg?
We created really close friendships with the people that we worked with. Oh, yeah, we're going to have a Christmas party next week.
A lot of these people are my mentors now. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we just give a shout out to Alyssa for championing the Canada Beyond 150 program?
In my books, you can always give a shout out to Alyssa.
Yes. Yeah, and she was kind of instrumental in just, you know, providing advice and really championing us.
Alyssa's an example of someone who deeply cares about these issues and about the power of government and of passionate people to effect real change. So Poya, Andrea, Roxanne, and Alina, thanks for coming by. Go out there and solve the problems.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We hope you enjoyed today's discussion. If you have feedback or suggestions for future topics or guest speakers, please send David an email.
Nous espérons que vous avez apprécié la discussion d'aujourd'hui. Si vous avez des commentaires ou des suggestions concernant de sujets futurs ou de nouveaux conférenciers, veuillez envoyer un courriel à David.
Thank you for listening, and we look forward to you joining us on the next episode of The GAC Files.
Merci d'avoir écouté le balado, et nous espérons que vous vous joindrez à nous pour le prochain épisode des dossiers d'AMC.